I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The Beltway Blitz each day at noon on Grant and Danny. Time up the lunch break. That's the idea. We get you a couple or more teams that you care about jammed into one segment. Today we're covering the Redskins and the Capitals, who are back in action tonight after a big win over the weekend. Let's get started. Craig Hoffman's our Redskins beat reporter. Let's start with the performance from Dwayne Haskins. Craig, he was immensely impressive yesterday. What changed? What was different? I thought the entire design offensively looked a little bit different.
Yeah, no, I think the game plan set him up for success. And so some of these little steps that he's been taking that we've been talking about, going, hey, trust us, there's little things that are getting better, turned into big things yesterday. And, you know, the ability to get to number one and just have it be open because you're passing on first down, and some of the balance and unpredictability that they had offensively, I think, took hold. And he's continually obviously improving and getting better and step by step, where he's recognizing protections and able to protect himself, and all those things turned into a very solid day. But I will say, one of the things I loved the most was what he said afterwards. He's like, man, it was like 260, two touchdowns. That should be an average day for me. That shouldn't be celebration like I had 400 yards and five touchdowns. And he didn't say that exactly, but the quote was, this should be an average day for me. And I thought that was a really cool perspective from him as well.
Craig, we've been pouring cold water on this thing, but I want to give you a chance to weigh in. Urban Meyer was there. To me, like, a lot of people were there, but obviously, you know, that's a bigger name than most of the fans that were just kind of hanging out. Seemed to me just a guest of McLaurin, and he's with Smith. He's just sort of hanging out. If he was really a candidate, he wouldn't have been there. What do you think? What are you hearing?
Yeah, no, that's where I fall on this. And, you know, well, we all feel like big dummies, and if in a couple of weeks he's the head coach, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, he's apparently got a relationship with Snyder already, so it's not like he needs to come to the game to introduce himself. He's there because he was close. He was at the Army-Navy game, and Terry McLaurin talked to him, Saturday night, and told him, like, yeah, I would love for you to come, and made him his guest. Dwayne said he didn't even know that he was there. But then you have Alex, obviously, from Utah days. John Bostic played for him in Florida. So he had a ton of guys that played for him on this roster. And, you know, for all the obviously, Nick Saban could come and have a slightly larger army, but Urban's got quite an army on this roster. And I think genuinely that's what that was about.
As far as the Alex Smith-Dan Snyder relationship goes, there was a report yesterday they left together 4 hours after the game. That used to be Bruce and Dan. What's going on there with Smith and Snyder?
I mean, Dan loves Alex. It's really that simple. They've become very close over the last 2 years, and I think even since Alex got hurt, probably even closer, because Alex has obviously not been spending time with, you know, doing football stuff. He's around and he's trying to get back and all those kinds of things, but he's, you know, he's around the building. And I think as a veteran and a guy who's been around this league and won everywhere, Dan has kind of latched onto him as a guy he feels like he can trust and pick his brain. And, you know, just how those two interacted, I think, in the immediate aftermath of Alex's injury had a large role on their relationship moving forward. And so, you know, what it turns into, I don't know. You know, I know it's been thrown out there. Could Alex be a potential GM or some other front office position? Like, I don't know at this point. I don't have enough intel to say definitively one way or the other, but clearly he's an advisor, whether it's formal or informal, and will have a fairly big influence on this organization moving forward. And the question is does that stay in a more informal way? And, you know, obviously, does he retire and or whatever, you know, machination it happens in. They're very close, and Dan trusts him, and that's, I think, most fans would probably say that's a good thing compared to Dan, say, trusting Bruce. The question is, obviously, does that mean it's in place of Bruce? And that's unclear at this point.
Yeah, speaking of Bruce, isn't he conducting all the scouts meetings? They have college football season's over, so they're all reporting back with their kind of, you know, first impressions, and he's there conducting business as normal, right?
I mean, yes and no. I think he's probably getting updates, but at this point in the schedule, really, that's still under, you know, that's still siloed. Kyle Smith is director of college scouting, and as the scouts come back from the regular season, they probably debrief with Kyle, and maybe Bruce is in on some of those things, but really, Kyle would be the one at this time of year heading all that stuff up, and then as you get out of the regular season, you know, then that's typically when a GM, or obviously in Bruce's case, a president, would get involved with that stuff, so... I mean, yeah, technically, I'm sure he has a role. I know he's probably talking to Kyle, you know, and getting a feel for what he thinks about certain things. As has been customary, he's going to do the job as long as he's got it. But, you know, we'll see how much longer he has it. I think that's the biggest question, obviously, in Redskins land and has been, I don't know, for a decade.
Thank you, Craig.
You got it. See you guys.
See you, buddy.
Let's talk hockey. J.J. Regan. J.J., for people who missed the game this weekend in Florida, what did they miss?
They missed a total team effort by the Capitals to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning, a team that is struggling this year but still has all of the talent to be one of the top teams in the NHL. It's just a continuation of what the Caps have been able to do this year. It doesn't matter where they need the contributions from. They're getting those contributions. TJ Oshie was good again. I think the difference in this game, you know, it's two teams with some of the top offenses in the NHL, and they battle to a 1-1 tie. And then with Ilya Samsonov in net, by the way, he got the start over Braden Holtby in that game. They battle to a 1-1 tie through 40 minutes, and then the bottom six comes out and scores two goals right away at the start of the third period. So it's a good illustration of why the Caps have been so successful this year. It's whenever they needed a contribution from wherever they needed it in the lineup, they've been able to count on it this season. And that's something that many teams covet, and the Caps certainly have right now.
Poor shooting for Jared Jeffries, Reagan. They're awesome right now. They're so good. You get one hiccup a month, basically. They had a bad game against Columbus, surrounded by just just boat racing everybody else. What are you worried about? Is there anything that like could go wrong? You know what I'm trying to ask? Like right now, it's amazing. Yeah. What might not be as good here in a month, 2 months, 3 months, et cetera?
Well, you know, we're getting into the dog days of the season where players start to think twice about making that extra effort to shot block. They start thinking twice about making extra effort to hit. If Cavs team, as skilled as they are, they are at their best when they are playing a physical, grinded-out style. It is a hard game to continue for 8 games a year. So I've always expected them to fall off a little bit in January and February. Now, they've been able to keep that pace markedly well through now mid-December. So maybe there won't be a drop-off, and maybe this will be one of those crazy seasons. But I've always sort of anticipated that there'd be a lull in January and February where they're not looking as good because they're not playing as physically, they're not getting in front of all the shots that have been doing in the first few months of the season.
J.J. Regan, NBCSportsWashington.com for your Capitals content. Thank you, pal. We appreciate it.
See you, dude.
Anytime, guys.
On the road, taking on the Columbus Blue Jackets tonight. I've got your pre and your post on NBCSW. Check us out at 6 o'clock. And postgame, about an hour after the contest ends. 7 o'clock start time tonight for the Caps.
I didn't like that taste in my mouth from that last time Columbus was in town.
No.
They owe them a little beaten. They owe them a little beat down.
Go to their place and handle their business?
Send a message that you got us. Congrats on that. Now here's the business. We're going to give it to you.
Let's get these hands.
Kind of one of those.
Why was the offense different yesterday? What was so varied for the Redskins? I don't mean the results, right? That was a great incidental element of a change of pace. But they could have changed a lot of things and they wouldn't have had the same success, you know, if they're not playing the Eagles defense or what have you. But what was different? It was very clearly not what we've seen for weeks in terms of design and play calling. Why? That's the question on Grant and Danny. We'll try to tackle it next on the bench. What was so different about the Redskins offense yesterday? I get why people are saying this because I was thinking the same thing. I just don't know if it's fair to Bill Callahan. We need more intel and info. But it did seem like maybe Kevin O'Connell was more involved, or like whatever power struggle there is to dictate and determine what they do with the football, swung in his favor a little bit more yesterday, just because it was a less antiquated, more forward-thinking offense. As an example, yesterday, the number one team in the NFL in terms of highest percentage of runs on first down. In the first half, the Redskins passed the ball on 7 first downs and ran it on 8. Almost 50-50. This is a team that for much of this year has been running the ball like 64-65% of the time.
That's right.
On first downs. In the second half, it was 5-5. That's largely because on the final drive on 3 first downs, the numbers get skewed a little bit. It was 5 out of 7 runs early. And not coincidentally, the second half, while okay, was not as successful. They didn't move the ball as much. They got some shorter fields with some takeaways and got field goals out of it. But the point is they had 25 first downs in the game, Danny, and they ran the ball 13 times and passed it 12. Much more balance, much more willingness. And what I loved about that was if you go back through the game log, and I just did, a lot of those first down passes come after Tony Bergstrom reports is eligible and Dwayne Haskins throws the football.
Going against type. It's what you have to do.
You bring out your heavy package. You got Peterson in the backfield with a couple of tight ends and a big, bulky collection of bodies. The Eagles have seen your tendencies and watched your film all year long, and they know that Peterson's coming downhill, except that then Dwayne Haskins passes short right to Peterson for 7 yards on 1st and 10. Then Dwayne Haskins takes a shot down the field to Terry McLaurin for 17 yards on 1st and 10. So it wasn't just that they called the pass plays, which I dug, and there were some like the first play of the game where there was no action. You don't need play action. It's just kind of quick, hot, out of Haskins' hands, slant, McLaurin wins, you pick up 9 yards, you set up 2nd and 1. But more important than that, the amount of times they went play action, out of that heavy look, with Bergstrom in the game reporting as an extra lineman, to then throw it, match up. Not a great player. You're throwing to like Jeremy Sprinkle, or you're throwing to Hale Henches.
But it's when scheme wins.
Exactly.
It's, and go back to, remember, where Bill Callahan couldn't stop talking about the self-scout with the bye week. He mentioned self-scouting a million times over. Well, that's why you do that. You self-scout and you realize, oh my God, everyone knows what we're doing every time, always, and it sucks and doesn't work. So you break type. That's what should have been happening for weeks, mind you. Now, when you start breaking tendencies more and more often, it becomes a tendency. Then you break that tendency. You always have to be a chameleon. Think about the Rams last year that went to the Super Bowl. Okay, this is a group that is coming out 3 wide, 4 wide, throwing it every first down. Well, everybody figured that out. So now you run the same packages out there, and you become a running team for a few weeks. You always have to go against type. You have to have looks and counters to those looks and then counters to the counters. That's what sports is. That's what post moves are in basketball. That's what pitching is. That's what offensive play calling and defensive play calling, for that matter, are. That's what sports is. Everybody's too good. Everybody's too smart. You have to continue to evolve. If it's, we're going to establish the run, enjoy the Mesozoic era. Look out for the brontosaurus coming down Main Street, idiot. This is what you have to do. So why did this happen? 3 reasons. And I actually am going to give Bill Callahan credit for it. Bill Callahan got the hell out of the way. That's the first thing that happened. It sounds like I'm ripping him, and I am for the other stuff, but not for this. Good. Get out of the way. Number 2, Kevin O'Connell had a smart set of ideas, implemented those ideas, figured out what does my quarterback do well, what's he confident in, what do my receivers do well right now.
Real quick, you're alleging, like everyone else seems to be, and again, it seems this way, but it needs to be said, we have no idea. Everyone's just assuming O'Connell took over more this week than Bill Callahan, which isn't fair to Callahan if that wasn't the case.
But I'm not basing this on a report. I'm looking at a result and going, I got a pretty good set of data that says if Callahan's in charge and puts his imprint on
it, this is what he wants.
The offense doesn't score a touchdown for a month. If we do it a different way, maybe someone else had their voice got heard at the meeting when we chimed in to figure out what we're going to do this week, right? Tuesday night, they get together. Oh, what's the game plan going to look like Wednesday? And Kevin maybe got to speak this time, whereas Kevin from Ashburn had to sit there and take notes copiously for the last several months. To me, this was, and I'm giving Callahan credit for it, I'm guessing, Callahan got out of the way, O'Connell, good game plan, and 3, simply Haskins was better. I mean, that's, you could design whatever the hell you want. If you get Dwayne Haskins from a month ago, I don't think this happens. But you got Dwayne Haskins this week, and that Dwayne Haskins was pretty good. So you add all those things up, you have an NFL-caliber offense.
So Haskins was better, regardless of everything else. I'll put a period and stamp approval there.
Mm-hmm.
I also think Haskins was just put in a better position to succeed.
Oh, yeah.
When you're not in third and long as often, it's a big deal. And they were not as often in this game as they have been for much of this season. I'll just run through their third downs for you right now. Third and six, manageable. Third and five, manageable. Third and four, manageable. Third and four, manageable. Third and five, manageable. Third and six, manageable. Third and one, manageable. Now, this is, by the way, I'm just going through this for the first time.
Uh-huh.
This is actually blowing me away.
Right.
I had no idea.
Uh-huh.
Third and one, manageable. Third and 12, first bad one we've gotten to. By the way, guess what? It was incomplete. They got off the field. Third and 10, pass for 9 yards. Couldn't sustain the drive. Third and six, manageable. Third and five, manageable. Third and four, manageable. Third and four, manageable. Third and five. You see where I'm going with this?
Of course, yeah.
Third and six, third and one. I think I'm repeating now. But the point of the dude's story is there were two third downs beyond 6 yards for the Redskins in this game.
They had
two.
They had three bad drives, as I pointed out all day. I keep saying game and day, and then I turn it into something else.
You turn it into being happy.
That's just really weird.
I think the definition is happy.
I've tried to point out this about the game all day. Good gravy. Talk for a job. Three bad drives over the course of the game. Two three and outs and then one where they took over with a turnover and had to settle for a field goal for not moving. All three of those, they ran on first down for nothing or negative. It's like it's a magic coincidence that that's what happens, right? When they mixed it up over the course of a series, they moved the ball. They didn't always score, but they moved the ball. Their worst drive among the others is when they moved it for 40 yards, ultimately punted because Bill Callahan decided not to go for it in that gray area, which he should have, by the way. That, to me, is proof positive. I know their passing game isn't great, but you have to set it up for success. That's how you do it. If it's third and nine, you know what everybody knows? That a pass is coming. When it's first and 10 and you run a little play action, not everybody knows that. That's when you can do better things. And you don't have to take it all at once. You could just check it down to a running back or to a tight end or a wide receiver running something basic and hot or easy. Get yourself 4 or 5 yards. That's a great play. When that happens enough times, people get sick of it. What also happens enough times is you get a little thing I like to call, Redskins didn't get much of this last couple years, Grant, yards after the catch. Yards after the catch. You let a playmaker in space make a play. That's delightful and exciting. That's what this league is. There are people, there are teams that basically only do that, and they put up 30 points a game just by doing quick stuff and letting guys get the ball in well-designed spots in space with the occasional deep shot. Watch the Kansas City Chiefs do offense. You tell me what's impossible for a quarterback to figure out how to do there when it's nothing but quick screens to Tyreek Hill and a bunch of receivers you never heard of that they draft who are 5'6" but fast, you know, checking the ball to LeSean McCoy and Darwin Thompson this past week. It's simple, basic stuff. It's throws to a tight end. There's nothing revolutionary about it in the sense that they're not throwing the ball downfield Hail Mary style every time they drop back. They're just doing stuff quick, exploiting matchup stuff. And it's really, really smart. And that's what people should be doing.
What did you guys notice about this week that was different? What did you think about this week's offensive plan? Which, man, was that just a pleasant watch? It was really the first time all year watching this team where I felt like they were in the 2000s. You know, I felt like legitimately they were doing what NFL teams do offensively. 800-636-1067 is the number. Grant and Danny on the Fan. A lot of excitement out the window right now here at 1015 Half Street, the site of tomorrow's Grant and Danny 10-year anniversary special.
It's a good theater.
To honor Bruce Allen's 10 years with the Redskins. Just in time for the big 10-year show tomorrow, the Redskins lost for the 100th time since Bruce Allen was
100.
Hired.
Big 100, man.
But tomorrow's the anniversary, baby.
Yeah.
December 7th, 2009, 10 years ago, it all went down. December 17th, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's another date that is famous, December 7th. This is December 17th.
What? Yeah, we know what the other one is. It's Chad Duke's birthday, December 7th.
It is.
Yeah,
Duke's birthday.
That's the one we're talking about.
Out the window, though, right now, we've got what can only be described as a real stare down.
This is your sort of office blitz. Like, you know, we have the Beltway blitz, what's going on in D.C. sports.
Yeah.
This is what's going on in the office right now. Key players here involved. You've got tow truck guy, car guy, and latest on the scene, D.C. parking enforcement guy.
Is that a guy from our garage or actual DC parking?
DC parking. I saw stickers that indicated this is the person that you love to see in your neighborhood. You just love to see it. He or she rolls around and gives you parking tickets if you're a minute past or 30 seconds past or don't have the right stickers or all the accoutrements, and they just love so much to give you parking tickets. So out the window, you've got the little drive that we all have to pull in to pack in the garage here is being blocked by tow truck guy. Tow truck guy is like, I'm towing this car. The guy whose car it is like, nah, you're not, bro. You're not going through me here. So tow truck guy's like, well, you're not leaving. Car guy is like, I'll leave when I want. And now everybody's taking pictures of it. Another one, what?
Do we have a development now?
Another tow truck just pulled up and they're completely blocking the street now. This guy has nowhere to go.
There's a second tow truck involved. So he called for backup?
So basically, this guy has no out because he's backed up against basically the wall of the building.
He's in a place you're not supposed to be. I'm not defending car guy.
He is parked on the sidewalk.
Yeah, car guy's in the wrong here. But what he's done is instead of just leaving his car in this narrow alleyway, he's moved as far to the side as possible to allow for through traffic.
Yeah, you can't park in the narrow alleyway and allow people to get through. So he's basically parked just to the side of it on the sidewalk. I don't know if it's the same car. People do that fairly regularly. And I think it might even be the same car. I've seen this done now several times recently. But these tow trucks are not having it.
Do you know what it is? Bonchon actually has a separate door for takeout orders. It's right next to where these cars park. I'm pretty sure that these are food delivery people that are just pulling in. They don't want to pay for parking on the street. They just leave their car. They go in, get the food real quick, come out. Now there's two tow trucks blocking you, and you're about to get towed.
You're paying the price.
So this is a Mercedes that's
pretty
out
nice
here parked. It's a very nice Mercedes.
No. We also have a reporter on the scene, if you look out the window.
Who's down there?
Blue Shorts is going to be calling us in a minute from the situation. He's walking up the alley right now.
He's literally walking down the street.
He quite literally is walking down the street. I want an assessment.
We've got it looks like it's a Nissan Altima that is parked there now. I think the Mercedes pulled out and back down the alley towards us, and now it's a Nissan there.
What happened was there was an original guy. That's how the tow truck came into this situation. At that point, the Mercedes left, and then another car pulled in and took the exact same spot in front of the tow truck driver. So now the tow truck driver is mad that he lost the first one. He's definitely going to take this guy.
He's getting something.
I think all he wants is a little meat on the bone.
Yeah.
He came here to chew bubble gum and to put a car hooked up to his truck, and he's all out of bubble gum. Let's go to Blue Shorts, who's made the trek about 50 yards out the window to the car. What do you see right now, Shorts?
First of all, you're welcome. There's actually another car that is blocking the tow truck from the front. It's a Jeep, and I'm trying to make sense of who's blocking who at this point, and honestly, who's even getting towed? Excuse me, sir, which car is getting towed?
Make sure he knows he's on the radio for legal purposes.
Oh, the blue car is getting towed.
The one that we're seeing, right?
There's a blue Jeep in front of the tow truck that you can't see. That's actually the car that's getting towed. The one that we thought was getting towed, this Nissan Altima right here in front of the window, the guy is sitting in the driver's seat right now. He's not actually getting towed. So, honestly, this may be a case of much ado about nothing, but I'm trying to get the scoop
Can you go up to the guy in the car and
Here comes
tell
a box
him,
truck.
Tell him you're on the radio so that legally we can hear his voice. But then ask him what's going on and why he's sitting there.
Okay, sorry. Excuse me, sir.
He almost got hit by a box truck just now. I'm not kidding.
Ma'am, sorry. I'm on the radio. Are you getting towed or is this guy getting towed? Oh, okay, you're leaving. All right, well, good luck with that. Sorry, that was a ma'am. I called her a sir.
You shouldn't have done that. You probably shouldn't have done
that. Didn't. She's trying to get out of here. Okay,
who was the tow truck blocking? The tow truck was blocking somebody, and there was a second tow truck.
By a Jeep.
Yeah, there's two tow trucks here. And they seem to be blocking this Jeep in. Now, I don't know if it's because the Jeep was parked illegally. I'm assuming that's the case. But now it's just kind of like jutting out into the street. So I don't know if they started towing it and then stopped for some reason. Maybe they got stuck. There's a weird catacorner thing going on here, like a giant 7-point turn situation. There's a lot of twisting and turning and contorting with the tow trucks going on right now, though. But that ma'am that I just spoke with, who's not actually a sir,
okay,
she's gone now, officially.
She made it out.
So when everybody I'm sorry, buddy. Whenever it came flooding to the window to look, the argument was hot, and that's what drew all of our attention.
But really, it was her just trying to get out of the spot.
Yeah, who was that argument between, and have those parties been settled now?
Those parties have settled themselves because she is gone. Mm. Not him, she.
Okay.
She's gone. So she's not getting towed today, whatever the case may be. And she said that I'm not getting towed.
The madam.
Or whatever it was that she said.
When you said you were on the radio, how did she respond to that? She was okay with that?
Well, she didn't seem to be fazed by it.
Okay.
And I was a little distracted because I realized that I had inadvertently misgendered her. But yeah, she was very focused on getting the hell out of here. So
hey, that was her mission. Our boss just tweeted us, and I think this is actually a great bit. He says, "Tell Chris Lingbach to yell at them in his Vince McMahon voice for no reason. Will you go up to the tow truck driver and just start screaming at him like you're Vince McMahon?"
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
Well, what would he say?
He might get arrested. I'm not really sure.
Well, I believe he has police jurisdiction, so I wouldn't mess with him.
There's a cop that just arrived. Hang on, there's a cop that just arrived.
Do the Vince McMahon bit to the cop.
Oh, no.
Don't actually.
Also, make sure they know they're on the radio.
Tell me what Vince would say in this instance.
He would be very humble, and because the character would be off. He would be dealing with an officer of the law. Please don't yell at the officer.
How about this?
Ask him what he's doing there, and then tell him he's fired.
No.
We respect law enforcement.
Oh, God.
We praise law enforcement.
Oh, no.
You're doing a great job.
I wonder if his hand's shaking like it was the other day.
That's pretty good. His hand is definitely...
Everybody's staring at me. Everybody's starting to look at me.
I wonder
why.
They think you're just the latest crazy person on the street corner in D.C.
I got to go, guys. I got to go.
Just take
it. All right, he's going.
There you go.
He drew the attention of the officer. So what was happening is the tow truck guy was talking to the officer, and his blue shorts did that and was walking by. The officer kind of moved his head into my view to the side of the tow truck guy to watch blue shorts go.
He's just a crazy guy in sandals while it's snowing outside.
You think it's the first time some nut job on the street corner in D.C. has screamed something while a cop's trying to do their business?
Absolutely the phone.
Probably.
Oh,
just
I'm
like
so intrigued.
A Monday for that guy. Let's go around the NFL with a playoff picture update. Next on Grant and Danny, Michael Phillips of the Richmond Times-Dispatch at 1. Speaking of Dispatch, thank you so much to embedded reporter and journalist with integrity, Chris Lingbach, for making that all work for us and getting to the bottom of what was going on outside the window. Around the NFL we go, and before we get to Sunday's games, we'll start down a level. Saturday, the Heisman Trophy ceremony, projected number one pick from LSU, Joe Burrow, a runaway Heisman winner. And broke O.J. Simpson's record among the modern vote for the biggest landslide win in recent Heisman history. Burrow couldn't get through his speech without getting emotional, understandably. He'd been through a lot. Transferred, was not a starter for 3 years. And when he got to Coach Ogeron, his head coach at LSU, couldn't contain himself.
Coach O. You have no idea what you mean to my family. You know, I didn't play for 3 years. You took a chance on me, not knowing if I could play or not. And I'm forever grateful for you. Can you imagine a guy like Coach O giving me the keys to his football program? He just means so much to me and my family. And to LSU, I sure hope they give him a lifetime contract. He deserves it.
It's a great line.
That's pretty good.
I loved that speech. I mean, he was clearly exceptionally emotional. Now let's go to the NFL Sunday's game. Start you off with the stunner of the day. The Falcons beat the 49ers 23-22, and they did it on the final play of the game As the clock expired, Matt Ryan had just had a touchdown taken off the board that probably should have held up. And then he found Julio Jones at the goal line. Controversy for Atlanta.
Matt Ryan for the win. No, Jones catches it, but not in the end zone. They're winding the clock, and they're saying it's over, and the 49ers rush the field. Dan Quinn is saying, wait a minute.
The previous play is under review.
They ruled him down, but this, as you
after
said.
After review, the runner possessed the ball and broke the plane. Therefore, it is a touchdown.
Game winner, Julio Jones went nuts against San Francisco. The 49ers lose. Damaging loss in their quest to win the NFC West. Seahawks, 49ers tied at 11-3 for the best record in the conference with Green Bay.
So as I had San Francisco. I said they could lose a few games down the stretch, and we'd be like, oh, my God, what's wrong with them? And the point is nothing, because their schedule was really tough. I didn't even count this one as one of their potential stumbling blocks, right? San Francisco is still really, really good. I think nothing changed after that loss. Atlanta played them really, really well. But you look at what San Francisco's had to go through in the second half. Their first half was a joke. Everybody was terrible. The best team they beat in the first half of the season was the Pittsburgh Steelers, who weren't particularly good at that point. Second half, they played a juggernaut, but that loss to Atlanta is going to cost them.
They've clinched the playoffs in San Francisco. So have the Buffalo Bills. They did it last night where they went over Pittsburgh. Sunday night football in the Steel City. Josh Allen to Tyler Kroft late to put Buffalo in front for good.
8 minutes to go. 3rd and 9. Allen to the end zone. Caught! Tyler Kroft, the tight end for the touchdown.
Al Michaels, Football Night in America on NBC.
That was a big one. That was important. Obviously, as you start to build something, right, as you're going towards the postseason, you've got to figure out a way, and they did.
Dallas Cowboys, you said earlier today, maybe the most impressive win of the weekend. They're 7-7. They're even with the Eagles. They win this Sunday against Philly. They win the NFC East. They lose. They will go into Week 17 needing a win and an Eagles loss to get to the playoffs. Yesterday, they pounded the Rams behind Ezekiel Elliott in a dominant running game.
Elliott, what a half! Touchdown, Dallas! Touchdown, Elliott!
Elliott, one of two Cowboys running backs to go well over 100, Joe Buck on Fox.
Story of this one to me is what Dallas' defense was able to do. The points that L.A. scored were late and they were garbage time. Including that late couple of touchdowns within the last 4 minutes of the game. Dominant defensive effort. They threw early to set up the run late. Dallas looked like a really good team.
Packers by 8 points over the Bears, 21-13. In position to win the division, assuming they don't lose a couple straight here, including to Minnesota in their upcoming game. Aaron Rodgers says, despite being 11-3, tied for the best record in the NFC, this team's just not getting the reverence it deserves.
I don't know that we have the full respect of the entire league at this point. Based on some of our performances, where we got beat by a couple scores and kind of the reaction, I would assume, to those situations. But we're 7-1 at home. We have an inside track at the 2 seed. Obviously, we have an opportunity to wrap up the division next week, which guarantees a home game and probably in the 3rd seed at worst. I like our chances. I like our football team.
If the Packers beat the Vikings, as Aaron Rodgers said this weekend, they will win the division. If Minnesota on Monday Night Football beats Green Bay, Packers have the Lions in Week 17. The Vikings have the Bears in Week 17. Green Bay would be in decent shape still, but they'd be tied going into the final week of the year.
When Aaron Rodgers talks, the loud typer must be so close to the microphone. It's a Green Bay thing. Right? Other guys and other coaches and other players and quarterbacks, when they have audio, you don't hear a loud typer. Something about the Green Bay audio setup where that guy, there's like a shotgun mic right on that guy's keyboard.
Only first place game of the day yesterday was in the AFC South, where the Texans and the Titans played. Houston led 14-0. Tennessee came storming back in a really impressive second half. In the end, a back and forth seesaw battle went the way of the Texans, behind Deshaun Watson's 2 early touchdowns on the road.
Well, they're getting one-on-one. Now's your chance to take advantage.
Goes for it. Back to Stills. He's got his second touchdown catch of the quarter.
24-21 final. Romo, Nance, CBS.
Most important moment of this game actually occurred early because it was going to be back and forth. You knew Tennessee would come in. Tennessee had a goal-to-go situation, had marched right down the field, pass in the hands of a receiver, bounces right into one of the Houston Texans who returns it nearly for a touchdown, set it up an easy score. That second score, I believe, in fact, from Kenny Stills after a turnover. So a 14-point swing right there. That changed it from a back-and-forth game that Tennessee could win to a game they were trying to play catch-up
in. I keep saying the Chiefs are back, and no one seems to be caring or paying a lot of attention.
Dude.
They pummeled the Broncos 23-3 defensively, shut them down and almost shut them out. It was a snow game, tough to move the football, but it didn't stop Pat Mahomes from finding Tyreek Hill early on.
First and goal for KC. From the moving pocket, hits Tyreek Hill. Touchdown, Chiefs.
Ian Eagle, CBS, on the telecast.
One of those games where if you just watch Denver on offense, you go, man, the elements are really affecting them. If you watch Kansas City, you go, oh, they can play in the snow. It just was, it looked different. Like they one was affected by the elements and the other was Kansas City.
Couple of goodbyes yesterday. We start Nice Rutherford, where Eli Manning probably played his final game in front of Giants fans. Couple of touches, three picks in a win, got the game ball afterwards. Here he was on the ovation he got.
I think I did a good job blocking that out, you know, just because, you know, I don't know what's going to happen going forward, and you know, whether, you know, I'm playing next week or not, and or, you know, in 2 weeks when we play again at home. So I think my focus is just getting this win. That's all I cared about, is just trying to go out there and play well, get into a rhythm, and you know, put the team in a situation to you know, to have a have this feeling. You know, it's still the feeling of just winning. In the locker room with your teammates after, you know, a hard-earned game, and to get the W is still, you know, the best feeling of all.
Speaking of the end of the road, the Raiders played their final home game in Oakland at the Coliseum. Derek Carr after the contest.
I feel bad for him. I feel bad for our team that puts in all that work, spends time away from our families just trying to get a win, you know. I feel bad for everybody. You know, that's especially the way it happened. That kind of hurts even more.
Raiders had a chance to win. Gardner Minshew led the Jaguars down the field to knock them off in their final game in front of that crowd.
I mean, Oakland was 6-4. Remember, yeah. They were in the postseason? Oh, my God. What a free fall. And they had that game won dead to rights.
Are they 6-8 now?
6-8.
Oof. Michael Phillips, Richmond Times Dispatch, kicks off the final hour of the show next on Grant and Danny.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.